his jaw spittle-flecked.
Blood. Bleeding. You bitch. You evil fucking slut. You're bleeding.
He unclasped his fingers, shoved her back against the bed, his body shaking. He flicked open his belt, kicked off his boots. He unzipped his pants, thrust them down. He exposed himself and stroked it, held it firmly, his eyes suddenly narrowing as he stared at her, a crafty expression sliding across his face.
Yeah, I know you. I got who you are. Hell of a thing, huh? You know, I was gonna kill you, but not now. Oh, no, not now. I'm going to keep you all for myself.
He stepped forward, his tongue dragging across his thick lips. Christy thought of how close she had been, just on the point of it, nearly there, so nearly there, when he interrupted her. As Scale moved towards her, his attention was caught by something else, something above her. He was staring upward at the ceiling, at the gloom high in the rafters, his mouth gaping ludicrously, his features frozen, into an expression of shock.
What?
Christy wrenched her head back, her eyes penetrating the shadows, felt horror and loathing flood through her as she glimpsed what he was looking at. A glimpse was all she needed, all she wanted. Clinging to a beam by one suckered hand, its twin free, the suckers writhing as they groped for the wall, was something she had never seen before, only heard about. A sticky. Scale jumped back frantically, his face livid, his arms swinging wildly. He turned and dashed for the door, just as a second sticky dropped from the shadows above.
No! Fuck!
At any other time, the sight of this half-naked man in a state of near-terminal panic, with his rapidly softening erection, would have been comical. But Scale was throwing off psychic waves of unadulterated terror. Scale sprang toward the crates, grabbed the nearest weapon to hand, a .45 automatic.
Fuck you! Fuck you!
Christy saw, with fright-flecked eyes, the slug slam into greasy flesh around stomach and thighs. They saw the creature stagger to its feet, red stuff oozing from wounds that were not gaping holes, but mere lip-like slits, already closing, as though sucking the bullets in. The sticky lunged at Scale, its sucker hands outstretched. Scale tore a box from one of the piles and heaved it at the thing. The creature's fingers caught the heavy object and held it, almost as though the box had suddenly become a part of it, a club-like extension of its arms. It swung the box and smashed it into Scale. The crates rolled and tumbled, some splitting open and sending cans of food spraying out. The sticky blundered into the avalanche and was hammered off balance, going down under what, for a normal being, would have been a bone-crushing weight of cans. Scale scrambled up and darted to one side, then disappeared down the long storehouse toward the far end. Christy, her mouth dry with fear, risked another glance upward. The other sticky was bounding along the wall, high up like a crazed spider, hand over hand, its long arms supporting its weight, with only an occasional kick with its suckered toes to keep balance. It was naked, save for tattered pants. The sticky made it to the upper chamber and vanished into the gloom. Breathing a prayer, the red-haired young woman closed her eyes again. Concentrating, she let her mind do the work, let it dive into itself, so that the light within increased, even as her focus became smaller and smaller. Her ankles were now free, and she could run for it, but her wrists were still tied, and without the use of these, she might just as well be hobbled again. She felt the familiar lightness in her head, a feeling like that of bare electric wires of almost no voltage brushing her wrists. This was power. Woman power in Earth, the mind as place. This was strength over material things, a power so strong and so centered in one place that it commanded all it touched. The cords binding her wrists began to stretch, fray. Then she got up, her hands free, though her wrists throbbed, the torn cords falling away, her eyes darting to the pyramid of cans so very close to her. Nothing stirred. She could hear no sounds from the other side of the barn. She put her legs over the side of the bed and sat on the edge for a few seconds, oblivious to the general stench of the place.
Thank Gaia.
She got to her feet, shakily. She was still wearing her boots, but her jumpsuit was in shreds, ripped and torn from breasts to knees. It looked like an animal had been at it, which was pretty much the truth. Glancing down, she saw streaks of blood staining the insides of her thighs and was aware of the dull ache in her womb. She gathered up what remained of her panties, flimsy shreds of cotton, and screwed up a strip. Squatting, she inserted it deftly into herself as a makeshift tampon. Then, still breathing quickly and managing to control the shivering fit that threatened, she hurried across the room to the open box of grenades. She grabbed four, stuffing three of them into various untorn pockets, keeping the fourth in one hand. She backtracked to where five automatic rifles leaned against the outer wall and selected one. No mag. She picked up another. Same again.
Damn!
Desperately, she picked up the remaining three. None had mags. Then she noticed that one of the crates had burst open, revealing mags aplenty. They didn't seem to be greased and factory fresh, but had been piled in willy-nilly, all kinds, all types. Straight, banana, long curve, short curve. More loot from a landwag train. Her eyes flicked over at the leaning row of rifles and SMGs, and she picked out a Heckler & Koch 9mm. Good weight, short, a nice, death-dealing compactness. She took it up, checked it, went back to the box, and tensely fingered through the jumbled mass of sticks, clattering them aside until she found two 30-slug curved mags. One she stuffed into a back pocket, the other she held against the gun, while she began cramming the fourth grenade into an already overstuffed pocket over her right breast. Suddenly, the pile of cans of food burst apart in a wild spray of tin, and the sticky erupted out of it.
No!
Christy's heart felt as if someone had just kicked it. She sprang back, dropping the grenade. She also dropped the second mag. The sticky came at her like a flying fury, and she had to dance away and flee back to the living area of the barn. Her right hand fumbling at the remaining mag jammed into her back pocket. It wouldn't come out. It had somehow gotten entangled with a pocket lip. Christy yanked the mag and it came out, tearing the pocket open at one side.
Shit!
But now she was all fingers and thumbs, and the mag would not slot in. The sticky jumped for her, and she felt its wind as she stumbled aside, saw the sucker pads of its right hand lunging at her. She raced away across the room, still trying to shove the mag into the SMG, but in her desperation only jamming it. Her heart was pounding like a trip hammer, and sweat was coming off her like glistening pearls. Adrenaline boosted her body, and desperation boosted her brain. In a microsecond, she took in the fact that one of the pillar supports that held up the upper chamber had heavy nails sticking out of it. Thrusting the mag between her teeth, she grabbed hold of one of the higher nails and thrust a foot at a lower one, the H and K stuffed under her left arm and held tight to her body. She began to pull herself upward. The nail heads were sharp. They tore at her flesh. She didn't give a damn. Didn't even think about it. The fact that her fingers began to bleed and the nail heads became suddenly slippery merely acted as a further booster. She reached the second floor and rolled over onto what remained of the floor planks just as the kill-crazy creature slammed into the pillar. She stared down at its fearsome, horrific ugliness as it too began to climb. She pushed herself up into a kneeling position and once more endeavored to cram the curved mag up into the SMG. But in her terrified haste, she fumbled more than before, and the mag suddenly became a living thing in her hand, flying out of her grasp. The sticky's head rose above the floor, and blindly she smashed the useless gun into its face, crashing the snub-nosed barrel repeatedly into one of its eyes and transforming it into a crimson jelly before the creature was jolted off its perch, tumbling back to the ground. Panic rose like nausea within her, and without thinking, she clutched at one of her grenades, yanking the pin just as the sticky leapt for the pillar again.
Fuck you!
She dropped the grenade on it and flung herself backward, scrambling as if demented away from the floor edge. The roar of the detonation nearly deafened her, and all at once the floor was rocking, then bursting apart. She staggered to her feet, her ears ringing, her eyes prickling and smarting. It was a miracle the whole barn hadn't collapsed, and after a moment she could see why. The sticky had taken most of the blast. Unaccountably, it had fallen across the grenade, hunched over it, acting almost like a sandbag. Except a sandbag would not have hurled gobbets of flesh and bloody entrails all over the place. The pillar she'd squirreled up had gone, and that part of the upper chamber's floor now sagged drunkenly downward, unsupported. Other pillars nearby looked about ready to collapse, and she glanced up at the roof fearfully. It seemed safe enough from what she could see through the dust and the gloom.
Christy girl, it is time to get the hell out. Now where the hell is Scale and that other sticky?
Among the mess, she spotted the first mag, the one she dropped, and hastily bent to pick it up. As she did so, she was dimly aware of sounds from outside. Suddenly, she could smell smoke.
Where there's smoke?
Confused, she stood up and glanced to her right, and saw that something was burning under the sagging floor of the upper chamber.
Delayed action from the grenade blast. Got to be.
Even as she watched, a tongue of flame caught a rotten plank and leapt up it, gathering strength as it gathered height. In 2 seconds or less, the single flame had become a leaping wash of fire, greedily engulfing the tinder dry beams, soaring toward the roof. Dense white smoke, caught by drafts, billowed around, mushrooming upward. Shadows trembled, became distorted by the lurid glare of the flames. The smoke caught her and buried her in a swirling fog, the acrid fumes choking her. She bent again, groping for the mag, her right hand that held the SMG thrusting outward as she stooped. She grasped the curved shape of the magazine, but the ancient K9 millimeter was snatched from her hand. She sprang upright, swung around. The second sticky was only a rancid breath away from her, starkly outlined against the blaze, its eyes glittering.
No! No!
She flung the mag at its face viciously, and the door to the barn burst open with a thunderous crash. Christy caught sight of a tall man, black garbed, dark-haired, an auto rifle in his hands. The man had stormed through the doorway, and now the sticky turned and moved with astonishing, horrifying speed, dropping the Agent K and leaping for the newcomer. The man fired a 3-round burst, but was off balance from the follow-through jump after kicking in the door. The slugs burned air, hammered the wall opposite. The sticky flew at him, enveloped him, both figures crashing to the floor close to the blaze that had volcanoed monstrously from the open door's indraft. Blazing timbers crashed down to the garbage-strewn floor, which caught in seconds, flames leaping everywhere. The heat was corrosive, clawing at exposed skin. For what seemed long moments, Christy stood like a statue, her green eyes taking in the struggling figures as they rolled and jerked on the floor. The sticky had suckers to the tall man's face, was pulling its arm back, the face seeming almost to expand outward. Flames eagerly devoured the timber beams and tarred roof. Christy came out of her trance and grabbed up the fallen mag and the dropped SMG. She felt calm now, completely in control of herself, perfectly in control of events. She slipped the mag up into the Heckler & Koch and moved across the struggling pair, her hands working the gun. She went around to one side, deliberately pushed the stubby barrel of the SMG toward the mouthless face of the sticky. The slugs tore through flesh and bone, smacking the head sideways even as they punched it apart in a greasy explosion of brains and glutinous blood. She fired another burst at the neck, this time uncontrolled, and the bullets tore through ligaments, cartilage, and the cervical vertebrae, taking off what was left of the head in an eruptive scarlet spray. The creature slumped off the tall man, the complete disruption of its central nervous system causing it to loosen its glue-like grip. It fell away sideways, a lump of unmotivated meat. The man shoved the body away from him and got to his feet. Christy saw by the glaring light of the fire that over his left eye was a black eye patch. A long scar throbbed whitely from the corner of his right eye to his mouth. Two red patches on his cheeks glistened where the mutated being's finger pads had slapped home, exerting their tremendous sucking power. His hair was raven black, thickly curled. He stared at her, then suddenly grinned.
Timely. Thanks.
She held the SMG limply in her right hand, feeling utterly drained. She couldn't say a word, felt as though anything she did say would come out as an incoherent gabble. Every dull ache in her body became a throb, her limbs, her head, her womb, her chest. The man's face blurred, and it seemed to be falling toward her. Or was she falling toward it?
Oh.
Strong hands caught her, held her gently.
You don't look as though you've been having a very good time.
She found herself with her face buried in the exposed fur lining of his black parka, where it was open at the zipper. It was warm and soft, its odor not unpleasant. She felt she could stay there for quite a while, but then reality flooded back. She jerked her head away.
Oh, Gaia. The fire, explosives, this place, this armory.
Whoa, 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 it's okay. We're getting out.
He grabbed her arm, pulled her into the cooler air outside. Her eyes took in two small armored buggies, one of which was firing indiscriminately at cabins and huts. The nearest buggy had a side door open, and the tall, dark-haired man hustled her toward it. Faces peered out at her, and she was suddenly aware that she was half-naked. The tall man had picked up his weapon and was holding it one-handed, butt into the side of his gut, his other arm around her shoulders. As they neared the buggy, he lifted the rifle and waved it, and the farther buggy ceased firing.
We couldn't find anyone else, although we could have missed.
I'm the only one. The only one left.
Okay, up with you.
He pushed her inside the door, and as she ducked her head, she heard the other buggy roar into a tire-shredding turn, before hurtling off toward the outskirts of the camp. The man banged the door shut.
Hey, get us out of here. That barn's full of explosives.
It was cramped. The rear of the buggy seemed packed with armed men. There was a strong smell of sweat and hot oil. There were two steps up to the narrow doorway that led out to the driver's area, which looked to be equally cramped. The driver revved the engine and swung the wheel. Christie glimpsed the storehouse with flames roaring around the roof, sparks jetting high. Inside the buggy, a fat man with a stubbled face was grinning at her, holding out a flask.
Trade this for one of your grenades?
She was conscious that the weight of the grenade in the upper pocket of her jumpsuit had caused the torn material to sag away, exposing her right breast. She closed her eyes and weighed the priority, thirst or modesty. She took the flask, put the neck to her teeth, and took a hefty slug. Neat brandy. Most of the raw spirit sluiced down her throat, warming and fortifying her. She took another slug of the brandy and handed it and the grenade to the fat man. Then she pulled her jumpsuit together.
Always the loser, Finnegan.
Story of my life.
The fat man grinned like a kid and shrugged, then nearly fell off his seat as the buggy bucked forward, jolting along on its shocks as though smacked by a giant hand.
No more barn.
The tall, dark-haired man squatted in front of Christie, clinging onto a metal projection to hold his balance as the buggy accelerated, jouncing over potholes on the rough track.
You're safe now. We're the traitor's men. I'm Ryan. I look after things for him. Who are you?
My name's Christie. Christie Roth. Very nice to meet you.
Ryan leaned back in the swivel chair, his fingers frozen in the act of lining tobacco along a paper, and gazed at the young woman seated opposite him. Almost unconsciously, he let his single eye drift across her eyes, large, profoundly green, slightly almond-shaped, down to high cheekbones that curved softly around to a firm chin, the nose long, the mouth full-lipped and generous. There were laugh lines there, an imp dancing in those emerald eyes. He thought it would be delightful to dive into their depths, sink slowly down, and drift. Still staring, he slicked his tongue the length of the paper and deftly twirled the result. Christie was rolling her own cigarette from the tobacco supply, her long fingers dealing nimbly with its creation. She was so fast that they seemed almost to flicker. Ryan watched, fascinated. She had cleaned herself up, now wore a green jumpsuit taken from stores. It fitted her in all the right places. It was loose and comfortable looking. She had even polished her boots, the interior lights reflected off the buffed leather. Her hair was just as lustrous, a shining, flame-red cascade over her shoulders and halfway down her back. To Ryan, when she moved her head, even if gently, her hair seemed to be wildly alive, to shimmer with a restless motion. Realizing he was blatantly scrutinizing her, he resumed their conversation.
It's a myth, plain and simple. A will-o'-the-wisp.
A land of lost happiness?
Crap. Ain't no such thing.
That's what Uncle Tyus used to call a double negative. What you just said is, there is not no such thing. And that means there is such a thing.
He firmed up the cigarette, the best he could do with such crude materials, long ago dug up from a buried warehouse site. At least, the packages had been airtight. He tapped an end against his thumbnail, then fished around in a top pocket, pulled out a lighter tube, and flicked it. A flame sprang up, quivering slightly in the draft. Ryan lit his cigarette. The ancient preserved tobacco was faintly sweet-smelling as it burned. He wasn't entirely sure what it was, although it wasn't a relaxant, like happy weed. Ryan left that kind of thing for off-duty periods. He grinned and pointed at the lighter tube.
A miracle. You know, we got maybe about a million of these little bastards. A billion, maybe. What's the next one up? Trillion? Found them in a military dump down south. Crates and crates and crates of the suckers. Guys who found them didn't know what the hell they were to begin with. Couldn't figure out how to use them. Thought they were anti-personnel booby bombs.
He grinned again. Shot a glance across the war wag swaying cabin at J.B. Dix, who was busy greasing one of his many pieces.
That's not to say that some of them aren't booby bombs. The ingenuity of man when it comes to the destruction of his fellows is boundless. I read that somewhere, or something akin to it. Education, you see, just like you. Double negative. Yeah, that surely is education. It's still a crock of shit, though, this land of lost happiness.
A paradise beyond the Deathlands.
There is no paradise beyond the Deathlands. Only death. This is a world of death. There is no other world.
Too pessimistic.
I'm a realist. It's the way it is, the way it'll always be. There's no escape. They screwed us a century ago, and we're left with the pieces. That's it. You make the best of what you've got.
But wouldn't you like to escape?
Odd question. Escape what? What else is there? We know a little of what's going on out there, though not that much, communications being what they are. Even so, it seems that out there is much the same as it is around here. Pretty shitty. Listen, I'll tell you. A person gets around with a traitor. I've been with him for maybe 10 years, and we've been all over. We've been as far west as you can get without falling off the edge. Up through the mountains and down to the hot seas. There used to be a wide coastal plain there. Cities, highways, millions of people. But it sank. Plain sank. Seems there was a fault or something in the earth. And it was the number one target, and they hit it. And it just tore the earth's crust apart, and the whole deal just slid into the sea. Goodbye, that particular part of civilization.
California. That's what it was. That's what they called it.
Well, there's no such place anymore. Hasn't been for 100 years or more. Not since the nuke. We thought of trying to salvage something from the seabed. There must be riches down there. A lost world. But it's too far, and we don't have the gear. And the sea is hot and bubbling and scummy. And there's things down there only a crazy man would dream up.
You could say that about everywhere.
Sure. Doesn't alter my argument, though. Which is, the West? Forget it. Okay, now, the Southwest. Maybe you know this, maybe you don't. There used to be desert down there, out of everyone's way. They were doing things they didn't want people to know about. Only snag was, the other side did know about it. They must have known about it because they pounded it, flattened it, took it out. There's only the wind there now. And sometimes that just literally sears what's left. And where there's no wind, there's nuclear garbage floating in the sky in great clouds as thick as mountains. Sometimes it flares up and sets the night on fire. I've seen it. The sky burns. Burns for days and nights on end. And then, it stops. Just like that. You don't know why, and you'll never know why. But it just stops, the fire dies, and all you have left is floating nuclear junk. You figure that's paradise?
No, that's not what I'm trying to say.
So what about the north? Oh, it's cold up there. Hellish cold. There's guys up there, they don't take their furs off more than once a year, if that. Didn't used to be so all-fired warm before, so it said. Except for plains where wheat grew. But it's cold all over now. It could be that the ice from the far north has shifted south, and maybe it's still on the move. Maybe it won't stop until the whole world is covered with it. A new ice age. Not in our lifetime, I guess. But it's a frozen hell up there, believe me. I've seen it. I've tried to trek through it. The guys who live there, the Franchis, they'd love to trade. But we don't have the means, the proper equipment. You go up there and your gas freezes in the tanks and gets like jelly. So let's try south, I'm easy. Like this, just you and me, we can go anywhere. So, south. Deep down south. Now that's a place, let me tell you. A dark locale. Far as I can tell, it used to be an area of mainly grasslands, woodlands all over. But now it's jungle, swamp, and rot. There's more mutants per acre down there than any place I've seen. I don't know why. Maybe the chem stuff got out of hand. Maybe the opposition went over the top, dumped too many toxins down there. Or maybe the climate just got hotter anyhow. Something to do with the sea. Who the nuke knows? All I can tell you is that it's a poisoned land, and I can do without it. Paradise it ain't.
Hey now, you don't seem to...
And then we shift to the east. Well, sure, that's civilized, I guess. Parts of it. I guess it's civilized because everyone there says it is. And sure, they got industry of a kind, and they know how to produce electric power better than anywhere else I know. And they got lines of communication that don't break down every 3 hours, and they can grow their own food, and they read and write, and on and on and on. But it's uncoordinated, lady. And beneath a thin skin of culture, it's as much of a hell as it is out here. There's maybe a dozen families in the Southern Enclave in an uneasy truce, all secretly lusting after what the others have got, all about ready to swoop in and grab any territory that looks to be weaker than they are. I read once about a country out there, hundreds of years ago. It was a large slice of land split up into little territories, all ruled over by individual princes and barons or dukes or whatever, all feuding with one another, greedy for land. Everyone else's land. And if they weren't fighting one another, they were figuring out how to stab one another in the back in the smartest way possible, so some other guy would get the blame. And at the same time as all this is going on, they're busy inventing and creating and painting pictures and writing books and fashioning crazy models or castles out of pure gold with all the towers and turrets and drawbridges and even arrow slits in the walls, all in proportion. And when you lifted the roof of the tallest tower, inside was a little glass jar for putting the salt in. Now that was civilization. Sure, I guess the peasants were treated like shit on the rich man's boots, but even so, it was a busy time, everything going on, an upward surge. They had ambition. There was always something beyond the next horizon, and the next, and the next.
Italy.
Heh, you did read books.
My mother. She made sure I knew as much as there was to know, as much as she could cram into me. She said it was important.
She was a wise woman.
Yes.
Christy bowed her head at the memory. Ryan did not pursue it. It was not the time. He kept his eyes on the scarlet glory of her hair, watched as she brought her head back up again, so that they were once more face to face. The imp had gone from her eyes. Now they held only grief.
Well, anyhow, the East Coast is nothing I want. It's an armed camp of greedy madmen. The muties are the peasants, and no one is creating paintings that will last for half a millennium, and the only gold that's coming in is from that fat rat Jordan Teague. And sure as nuke shit, no one's making salt containers out of it.
If it's an armed camp, who armed it?
She stared at him, clear-eyed. Ryan held her gaze for maybe 6 seconds, then looked away and shrugged.
Yeah, okay. Point. Maybe we all realize now that our trade routes have been built on orders we should maybe never have delivered.
Maybe?
Okay. We should never have delivered.
He stopped and stretched. His hands plucked at the crimson scarf tied around his throat, and he loosened it. The ends hung heavily down to his waist.
Look, one doesn't always think ahead. You don't plan for the future, figure out the pros and cons of what you're doing. The present is all, lady. The here and now. It's the only thing you have to wrestle with. And that, in fact, is the history of the human race. Always too frantic, worrying about what was happening in the here and now. We forgot that the future is created in the present. That whatever is done in the here and now is an influence on the years to come. It's too late, lady. Too damn late.
You could make a start by not delivering all this heavy shit to Moxon. I don't know anything about the load you're carrying, but I sure as hell know all about Jordan Teague and his mini-empire out near the Darks.
Funny thing. Teague ain't gonna be, and you can take that as a non-double negative that's a great big positive, he ain't gonna be too fire-blasted pleased about this load.
That's funny.
Well, you see, it just so happens that most of Teague's consignment went up when Truck 4 blew. Boom. All those grenades, all that high explosive, all those old armor-piercing shells. Sent most of his delivery to glory in a great big blaze-out. Lucky for us, though, because that's what creamed most of the stickies and other mad muties that had us in a fix. And that means that Teague's gonna be getting short supplies. Pity.
And did it?
Did it what?
All go up.
As it happens, no, of course it didn't. But Teague's not to know that. It's the perfect scam. You may not believe this, but we do have a code. Of sorts. I mean, listen, we don't spend sleepless nights gnawing away at the problem. It's too late for that. Way too late. The old man did it to survive.
Sounds like excuses made too late. But you still didn't answer the question. Would you like to escape?
To what? There is no escape from the Deathlands.
Uncle Tyus thought there was.
You mean get a boat, take a trip, sail across the ocean? You don't know what's out there or under the waves, just waiting for you. You don't know what's waiting for you on the other side, either. Could be worse than here. Though that's hard to imagine.
No, he didn't mean that.
Ryan pointed up at the dull metal ceiling of the swaying war wag.
You mean up there? In space? How? Why? All there is up there is free-floating garbage. We know the old guys had, I don't know, kind of settlements out in space. Huge constructions with their own air supplies. That kind of thing. But how the hell do you get to them? All the places where they had vehicles, aircraft, what have you, were blitzed in the nuke. We've stumbled across launching grounds with wrecked machinery, incredible rusting hulks lying around, chunks of dead metal. But there's no way you can get this shit off the ground, believe me. No way at all.
No, that's not what I mean either.